You know what? This is what we get for starting a podcast. Like, who the fuck do we think we are?
I'm Alex Higley.
And I'm Lindsay Hunter. And I'm a writer. Bud. Welcome to I'm a Writer, But. Today we have Frances Badalamenti with us. Frances was raised in Queens, New York and suburban New Jersey, but she now lives in Portland, Oregon with her husband and son. Her essays, stories, and interviews can be found at The Believer Magazine, Long Reads, Volume 1, Brooklyn, Entropy, and elsewhere. Her debut novel, I Don't Blame You, was published in May 2019. Salad Days on Unsolicited Press, her second novel, is forthcoming this month, October 26th, so go order it immediately. Welcome, Frances.
Hi.
What are you going to read?
So I'm going to read the opening portion of Salad Days. So yeah. Salad Days goes between Portland and New Jersey. So I'm reading a section that takes place in Portland.
Awesome.
Okay. I leaned my ratty forest green three-speed on the porch and let myself into a small, not very well-kept bungalow off Northeast Alberta Street. I headed into the kitchen, passing a pile of dirty dishes, coffee dregs in a pot, and a glass ashtray with a half-smoked cigarette stubbed out and perched in a groove. I grabbed a cigarette out of the ashtray and followed a trail of wet footprints through the hallway. Loud music radiated through the drafty old house. And between the piercing music and the lingering smell of fried garlic and Nag Champa incense, and the events of the past few weeks, I had to lean on the counter because I felt dizzy. "Anyone fucking here?" I yelled. "Is anyone home?" I yelled. I headed towards the back of the house, hovering in the hallway. I took a few more steps and could hear running water coming from the bath. The old floorboards creaked. I peeked inside the bathroom and found Jess alone in the tub with a dark green clay mask encrusting her face. All I saw were these wide, dark eyes staring back at me. The tub water ran fast and hard. Arches of Loaf's album, Icky Metal, was on super high volume, preventing easy verbal exchange between me and this person who I had met only a few months ago, who came from where I came from, and who had become a crucial, codependent part of a new life in a new city. I sat on the toilet and lit the half-smoked cigarette with a lighter that I found on the windowsill. I took a drag and handed the cigarette to Jess. We looked at each other. She took a drag and passed the cigarette back to me. I smoked and gazed out the window into the overgrown backyard, past the blackberry brambles and the huge weeds and the tall uncut grass, towards a detached garage with a moss-covered roof. A few months ago, my husband Paul and I had attended a group art show that Jess had put together in that garage. It was soon after we had uprooted from Jersey and replanted ourselves in the Pacific Northwest. The combination of that unfamiliar environment and the sense of cedar fencing and wet dirt and dense weed made me feel alive in a way that I had never felt before. Everything was so novel back then. The smells, the visuals, the people. It was still like a dream. It was like living in a dream. That evening, as I wandered around, pretending to be interested in the artwork, Paul stood in a corner, gripping a can of cheap beer and chatting with people we didn't know yet. There were about 10 shoddy paintings, a few framed pencil drawings, and a bunch of black and white photo prints nailed or tacked to the dusty garage rafters. I had never been to a backyard art show before, just the stark white galleries of Manhattan, where you often feel scrutinized, uneducated, lesser than. I felt at ease and curious in Jess's garage, even though the work was so amateur. I was more interested in the people anyhow. We were all somewhere in our 20s, had transplanted ourselves to Portland, and had creative aspirations of some kind. We all wanted to live somewhere that had affordable housing, maybe even a small patch of grass where you could grow food and pot. There was no talk of the stresses of living in Manhattan or Brooklyn, nothing about the rising cost of rent, no utterings about the existential boredom of mundane cubicle life. Most people who knew Jess, worked in coffee shops and restaurants and bars. And that is exactly why Paul and I left when we did. We didn't want the pressure to live a certain kind of life and pursue a certain type of career just in order to make ends meet. At first, we thought it would be San Francisco or Seattle, but those cities had gotten too intense and expensive, so it ended up being Portland. It was that night in the moldy garage that made us feel like we had truly arrived, as if we had taken the best parts of what we left back in Milltown and transported them out to Oregon. Jess leaned back and closed her eyes. I remained on the toilet with my head in my hands. Dana came out of her bedroom wearing a black string bikini, her face also covered in splotchy green drying clay. She closed the bathroom door and slithered into the tub, the bubbly water almost overflowing onto the floor. Jess turned off the running water and the small room finally quieted to a gentle hum. All that could be heard was the droning sounds of the music blasting from the living room and the splish splashes from the tub. Okay, I'll stop there.
Francis, as you were reading, as I was reading this book over the past week, I was so just struck by, you know, these are places that you've actually lived in your life, and whether or not the narrative has any connection to your life or not, I was impressed just the shape of this novel, how you arrived there. I can sometimes struggle to find a narrative shape when I'm dealing with places that are very familiar to me. And I was just curious if you could talk a little about the process of forming a narrative out of, you know, places that you've lived and have so much experience with.
Yeah, I hear you. Yeah, I feel like it was a little bit clunky trying to find my way. I mean, the story is such like it's East Coast, West Coast, right? It's like Jersey, it's Portland. It's like, and it couldn't be one or the other, you know? Because those two places like are kind of this like, I don't know, it's like this convergence feeling, right? Like, like I couldn't have one without the other. Like, just wouldn't make sense. Is that helpful at all?
Yeah. No, I was curious, is that something that you arrived at while drafting, or did you kind of know even before you sat down to work on Salad Days or whatever the title was as you were drafting that you needed both those places?
Yeah. So absolutely. I knew, like, it really, like, the main narrative, I feel like, is the East Coast, like, the Jersey, right? Like, so it's, like, it started off with, you know, Anna works at this independent music venue, right, in New Jersey, okay? So this is based on me working at a club called Maxwell's in Hoboken, New Jersey. So that's like, I wanted to really like sort of like relive and depict that like sense of place, like that very specific place at that very specific time. But what was happening was like, as I was writing it, I kept going forward. Like, it was really like also so much about me leaving that and moving to Portland, being in Portland and looking back on that time. Mm-hmm. Okay. Like, that's why, like, one, it couldn't be one or the other, because it was, I needed that Portland perspective to look at the East Coast Jersey perspective.
Got it.
Yeah. It's like, I feel like when I left Florida, I couldn't see it clearly until I was in Chicago. And then I was like, oh, I kind of can write about that now.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. You need, like, you can't really, like, let's say I stayed in Jersey and like, you know, I don't think, like, I just wouldn't have that same perspective. There's something about leaving your roots, right?
Totally. Do you feel like you write a lot from your life? You know, like, you fictionalize these very real things in your life?
I do. Like, I identify as like an auto fiction writer.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, I know, like, that word is like a trigger. It's just like triggering for a lot of people, but I that's the closest, that's really, you know, like autobiographical fiction, right?
Mm-hmm.
you know, so.
No, I think, and when I was like, oh, okay. I think, cause I was trying to think, now what is that word a trigger?
It is. It's like, it's really off-putting. It's fun. It's like, I love autofiction. It's definitely like a genre that I am all about, but a lot of people are kind of like, maybe it sounds really pretentious. Like it's like French, you know what I'm saying?
I feel like recently with like all the Knausgård books, people have been really turned off by those, maybe just because of exposure. And I feel like maybe there's just been some recent authors that have written stuff that's been called autofiction. And I don't know. Yeah. I have.
Right.
Yeah, it's not triggering for me at all. Yeah. And honestly, I think the great thing is a lot of times, depending on how much you know about the writer, you know, there's no real reason for you to know that it's not like autofiction is going to dictate the shape of the paragraph, the way these sentences work, the relationship between anything that's going on within the text. You know, it's like the generative portion may be, you know, directly from the person's life, but that doesn't really speak to the nature of the words on the page. Yeah. Right. So it's like, to me, it's like, I it's such a broad genre that it's like, yeah, it's awesome. Cool.
Totally.
I think people assume everything is autofiction anyway. Like,
right.
You know, even I like am reading, you know, I read a book and I go look at the acknowledgments and I'm like, okay, so yeah, she is married. Okay.
Exactly.
So that guy. Totally. And it's so unfair and so silly, but you know, you're always trying to put like a face, you know, to everything. And, you know, I think that's where that comes from.
I agree. And it's like, I come from like when I started writing, like seriously writing, I was immersed in memoir. Like mm-hmm. that was like my, like, you know, 10 years ago was like the thing, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I was writing a lot of like personal essay, and like my first book I wrote originally as a memoir. Mm. And then I was like, actually, like, I could make this shit way radder if I, you know what I'm saying?
Like, totally.
So, you know, that's where that comes from. But it's very, like, my stuff is very, like, it's definitely taken from my own experience, but, like, for sure, like, tweaked, you know?
Yeah. You have more freedom, you know, kind of with autofiction, you know, like, you can sort of take where the very real emotion and experience lives and then sort of hone it into another thing.
Totally. And you cannot do that with memoir. Like, I don't feel like you can do that with memoir.
Right.
I really don't. I mean, I think you can make things really literary and beautiful, but you can't like fuck with it that much.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
I mean, I would be afraid to and call it a memoir.
I know, but you know, this argument's been going on for years, right?
It's so true.
Probably my favorite character in the novel, Frances, was Dana. I just I love Dana's like clarity. There's so many moments where it's like, she just has such clarity on the situation and just sees, there's the moment, you know, where she says, oh, I bet you'll leave Paul, and just like cuts. And then later she has, I mean, there's kind of a similar moment that she has with, later in the book as well. And it's just like, I was wondering, did the way that, that revelation in the book kind of works as a, it's a really wonderful transition. And I feel like kind of a motor for the second half of what's to come, even though the narrative is, you know, not told chronologically. Did you have Dana playing such an, obviously she's not like, you know, page wise, she's probably not even close to being the biggest character in the book, but did you know she would serve such an important function early on?
You know, I did and I didn't, right? Like, I think what Dana really represents, even the name, is so like Jersey, right? Like, like if you know any Danas, they probably come from New Jersey. So it's like, I think that character just represents like the honesty and the like directness of the Jersey. And like, you're right, like that statement, like you're gonna leave Paul for this guy, is like, it's profound, you know, right. It's like, and she, you know, that character knows the truth. Like, you know, Jersey mm-hmm. Dana knows like what's up.
Definitely.
Right? You know, Jersey Dana.
Exactly.
We all know Jersey Dana. She will fuck you up, okay? Don't even mess with Jersey Dana.
Totally French manicure, like the whole
That's all you need to know. What was it like putting out, because your first book came out in 2019 and then this is coming out this month. What kind of mind fuck is it putting out two books so close together? Like, was that hard on you? Was it exciting? Like, how does that feel?
I don't know, you guys. Like, I'm just at this point where I'm like, you start writing books, like, you should like cranking out books. Like, Salad Days was, let me think. I think Salad Days was written by the time I Don't Blame You, my first novel, came out. You know, like once I started, like once I figured out how to write a book, I was like, oh, like I'm just going to keep writing these books, you know? So it sounds like it's like 2.5 years apart. I think it's like 2.5 years apart. But like, you know, yeah, I think it feels just about right. I will say I am having a really hard time writing the third book because of this pandemic, but that's a whole other podcast.
Oh God. Yeah. I mean, that's our theme. That's all our long running theme. How are we going to get this done?
No, I know. It's like, and some people are like pumping shit out. Like, you know, I'm in a weird place with that personally, but you know, I'm committed. To answer your question, I think I think those two books like needed to get, they're like the books that needed to get written. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So
when you say, as soon as I figured out how to write a book, what do you mean by that? Tell us what that process is for you. Like what is, 'cause it's different for everyone I know. So I want to hear what writing a book is for you.
You know, I think like the first thing that comes to my mind, and I work with writers, I teach writing and I'm a counselor for writers. So, you know, I always tell people like so much of it is like, it's about like how you feel about yourself. And it's like really comes down to confidence in yourself and like the whole, you know, inner critic thing. So I think once I like was able to quiet that inner critic, I was like, oh, like I can totally do this and it's all good. It's cool.
How did you quiet that inner critic?
Okay.
Tell us.
Guys, it's a lot. Like it's a lot of fucking hard like work. You know, we could talk about, you know, like for sure like intense therapy for sure. Like all your little practices, whatever you do, you know, for me, it's yoga, it's meditation, it's walking like a motherfucker, you know, like just Forrest Gump style walking. You know? Keep walking it off. You know, it's, I don't know. I've heard so many writers talk about it. I remember, do you guys know who Jonathan Ames is?
Yeah.
Sure.
Right. We all know John. Like, you know, I remember like hearing him on an interview talking about the inner critic and like that dude's written a bunch of books. He's worked on like TV and like film or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And like, he still, I remember him talking about like still like the inner critic is haunting him, you know? So I think it will always continue. And I think that is a motivator in a lot of ways, you know? But you just got to keep it kind of quiet. And I think we all have, you know, just different like tools, right? Like what else? What else? I mean, like, I don't know, you know, I have to have like a warm beverage, like a baby.
Yes. This is the good shit here.
Right? That's like a baby bottle. Like I have to have like a warm, hot drink. Like it's ritual too, right?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Is it always the same warm, hot drink? Or are you like, are you doing like, what is it called? Glog? Is that a real drink? Glog?
Sure.
It's like a holiday drink, right?
Oh, glog. Right. No. Okay. What are my hot drinks? Like for sure. Like I'm a milky black tea, like a good black tea with like milk and
like a London fog.
Like a London fog. Okay. Like, okay. I cannot really handle coffee anymore.
Hmm.
I know it's terrible. A little bit, but or like that turmeric shit. What is that? Golden milk.
Yeah, golden milk. Yes.
Golden milk. That's like mother's milk. You know, it's like a baby. I'm telling you. So yeah, like whatever I can kind of like get my hands on, it really has. And then like how much caffeine have I had, you know, like that kind of thing. It's like neurotic stuff, right?
I know. It's, you know, I used to think to myself that I couldn't write unless I had, well, I don't have the right kind of desk.
Exactly. Totally. I've had offices before. Like I've rented places, you know, studios, like, and then I don't go there. You know, we are like, we're crazy people, right?
Definitely.
Yeah, but it does get to the point where you're just like, I'm going to move my fingers across the keyboard and I don't care. There will be something on the page. I am so sick of myself.
Yes, you have to, or else it hurts, right? Like, mm-hmm. You know, like, I think that's where it is with me and my book, like in writing books, is like, if I'm not working on a book, like, I just feel like, what's the point?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, once I started writing books, I was like, that's it. It's like being in the mafia. Like, there's no way out.
Frances, tell us a little bit more about your counseling. Are you specifically dealing with writers? Are you dealing with all sorts of artists? What does that look like for you in your life?
So I trained to be a counselor probably about 10 years ago. My son was little and I was like, I gotta get out of the house. So I went to grad school. I always wanted to do it. And I started out working with like just the worried well, like the general population of like people, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I was just, it fell flat for me. You know, I was the kind of person that's like, well, if you don't like, then just break up. Like, what's the problem? You know, like, so that was just not working. So after like years of like, okay, what am I gonna do? Like, you know, what am I making of my life? Yes, I write, but like something's missing. I realized that I wanted to work specifically with writers. So my work with people is like kind of, it's like a hybrid. It's like part counseling, like what's going on? Like, how are things going with your mom? Like, you know, and then it's like half like, all right, let's get to the nitty gritty of what you're working on and like what's getting in your way, right? Like, why are you not like working on that essay? Like what, okay, let's read it. Like, let's edit it. So it's kind of, I guess it's really like a mentorship in a way, you know?
That's awesome. Never heard of, I mean, it sounds like you're doing so much for these people. I mean, it's like to all the way from, you know, things going on in their actual lives to editing work. That's kind of amazing.
Yeah. But like, isn't that like, yeah. Like, don't we all want that, right? From somebody.
Totally. I just don't think I've ever had it in any, you know, I've had it part, you know, maybe 75% of that, like in friends, but I've never had it in a setting where it was more, you know, professionalized. It's amazing.
Yeah, it's kind of like rent a friend, right?
Like, yeah.
It's like rent. Yeah, like rent. It is. It's unique. It's definitely unique. And it, I feel like with each client, it's all really different. You know, with some folks, it's like a lot about their lives and like, you know, just getting them to kind of baseline, right?
Mm-hmm.
And getting them to a place that they can actually write. And then with more like higher functioning people, it's like, let's just get into the manuscript. And like, that's where the editing part comes in. Right. So anyway, yeah, it's really rad. I love it.
Yeah. That's amazing. I love that. I think something like that would be, I'm surprised that I haven't heard of something like that before. Cause I feel like a lot of people are actually kind of looking for more of that hybrid. I think, you know, whether it's like, I don't know, deeper on in your, you know, time with the manuscript, like when you're on submission or I don't know, anything. I feel like, you know, if not everyone is able to really lean on friends in that way. Not everyone, maybe, you know, people who are newer to writing don't really have community or whatever yet. So yeah, I think that's really cool.
Totally. And I wouldn't be able to do what I do if I hadn't gone through the process myself.
Mm.
Right. So like, I know what rejection is like. Like you got, you could look at my Excel chart of like submissions. Like totally, I know, yeah. Right. Like I know what like the agent landscape looks like. I know, you know, I've been there, right. Mm-hmm. I've been to the bottom of all of that. So I can, it's like a midwife, you know, it's like a literary, it's kind of like a midwife kind of relationship. You know,
my awesome. God, a literary midwife. A literary
that's awesome.
Okay. All right.
I love that.
Yeah. It's fun. It's really fun. And it doesn't work for some people and it really works for other people.
Right.
Yeah. I feel like, you know, you can, I mean, this is the whole reason that Alex and I started this podcast, because you're sort of like in this lonely space, wondering if you are just like a very unique loser or if other people are going through these, you know, these hard things that you're going through or failing or are hopeful about certain things. And it just, it's immensely helpful to hear from someone who's also in the trenches and has been in the trenches a little longer and, you know, is offering to help. That's so great.
Right. And then it's like, I don't have the, like, you know, we all know what it's like to be sort of in competition too. Like, mm-hmm. but this situation also like eliminates that ego or like that part where there's that, like, you know what I'm talking about? Like, it's that envy, like, mm-hmm. you know, like with writer friends, sometimes it can get a little bit like a little gnarly like that.
Yeah, of course. Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely. It's I think we call it our chip on our shoulder or our bag of chips on our shoulder.
Huge fucking bag.
Right. You know, like it's a concept, like it's the ego, you know, it's like it's natural to feel that way for sure. But it's a little bit distracting sometimes, you know?
Yeah, you can kind of get mired in like, well, someone else's success means that I don't get success. There's no room for me anymore. Or they're taking, you know, like they took a whole turkey leg and all I have is this little, I don't know, what's another part of the turkey people eat? I'm a vegetarian.
The other part, the bad part.
You know, the other part that no one wants. The giblets, although some people probably like that too. So I'm sorry.
Yeah, I don't know.
Lovers. But yeah, it really can feel that way.
Exactly. Totally. Absolutely. It's just what we deal with. It's kind of part of being a writer, you know, to just be checking that, right? Just to be checking that all the time.
Tell us about working with Unsolicited Press, because this is, both books are on Unsolicited, right?
Yep.
Okay, awesome. Tell us a little bit about how you came to be working with them and what that process has been like.
Totally. So my first book, like I mentioned, it started off as a memoir and I like shopped it around, like the whole deal, right? Like, you know, it had been engaging with agents, you know, going to like the literary, you know, workshops and meeting the editors and the agents and all the things. And there was definitely like some interest in it. And then it just never found a home, right? Like, hey, that's the other thing that writers, it's hard for writers to understand. Like when you write a book, it does not mean that it's immediately going to get published. Like, you know, like,
oh, yeah.
Right. Right. So I think we all kind of have that beginner's mind of like, what, like you write a book and then you find a publisher.
I mean, I still trick myself into thinking that way.
Yeah. Maybe that's just like just sort of a coping mechanism, right. Or something, that we believe that, because I think most writers that I talk to also believe it. But anyway, I believed it. And then I realized that that's not really true. And it was a struggle. And I went through all the things that you go through when you're trying to get a book published. And then it was random. I think I had probably already written the second book. And I just like one day, like the email pops up, right? Like it's that email. Like out of, like I put the book back in the drawer and I was just like, I'm working on the next one. And the email came and it was like, I just came across your manuscript, you know, I'm interested in publishing it. And that was Unsolicited Press.
Whoa.
Yeah, it was just like, I think it was a year late. Like, I think it was like a year after I had put it in the drawer.
Are you saying unsolicited solicited you?
Unsolicited solicited. They said, I submitted, I had submitted to them like forever. Like
you
like,
solicited them.
I solicited unsolicited.
Oh God, that's amazing.
And then anyway, so they email, so that, yeah. And they just, yeah. And then it's just, they're chill. Like, they're so like, you know, it's like, do what you want. Like, we got you, like, cool. You want to do that. As a matter of fact, I had the biggest drama, like, it's not the biggest drama, but I had a book, like a book nervous breakdown, over salad days, probably like a couple months ago.
Mm-hmm. Oh, why?
I'll tell you. So, I used the name, how do I explain this? So in Salad Days, the name of the independent music venue that Anna works at is called Milltown Tavern. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
That was not the name that I had originally used. And somebody came across this other name that I used and got really upset by it. Anyway, without getting into like the entire narrative of it, but it was really intense for me, and they were cool with just change. Like they had already printed like a bunch of books, and they threw them out and reprinted my book.
That's amazing.
So they're crazy supportive, and just like chill, you know, like. No, like no pressure, no stress. Like we just want you to be happy.
That's so cool.
That's cool. I feel like we've heard so many horror stories about, you know, smaller presses taking advantage of authors who don't know any different because it's a first or a second book. And it's so great to add another name to the list of ones that aren't going to fuck you over. So that's very cool.
Yes. Please be.
Yeah. Just good, like good, solid. We just want you to be supported. We just want you to be happy. Yeah, a lot of creative freedom. Like both the book covers, like my husband designed.
Oh, cool.
Oh, yeah. We were just admiring how pretty Salad Days is.
Thank you.
It's so polished and just really, really pretty.
Thank you. Yeah, that means that's really important to me. The look and feel of my books, kind of like a bit of a design snob. So they let me do, you know, like they didn't have to like, you know, let me design my own book cover. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Stuff like that, right. Oh, so I'd be the kind of person that would be like really bummed if like my book cover was like corny or something. You know what I mean?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Like a salad on the like, you know,
like a calendar with a salad on each little square.
Exactly.
Salad Days.
Suck. That would just be miserable. So yeah, but there, no, that's been rad. I have to be honest. It's indie, right? Like we all know what that's about. You know, it's like, it's not a big publisher and all that, but I get to write books, right?
Yeah. Absolutely. Oh man, the indie presses are the best. That's like where all the exciting new voices are. And
totally.
Hell yeah.
Totally, right? And we make all the big money.
Oh yeah, that's where all the money is and all that's the fame.
All the money is, right? So.
Totally. What is your third book about?
So this one is like, it's a lot about mothering and parenting and the struggles of being, you know, like in a, you know, heterosexual, like male and female, like, you know, we're not a white family. We're a biracial family. Mm-hmm. So I can't say that, but you know, just this sort of like, we're very privileged in so many ways. So it's based on my experience, you know, like I was able to stay home and write my books for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
I was able to like wake up, get my child to school, You know, make him a big breakfast, go to, you know, then go to yoga, like drink that fancy like tea and coffee, you know? So it's a lot about privilege and really like, you know, there's still a lot of struggle. So it's kind of like, yeah, it's like, it's a lot of vignettes of like family life. So yeah, hope that's helpful. It's early. Like I don't have a lot written. And I don't have a full arc because of the pandemic. The other thing that's been really hard about the pandemic is all my favorite coffee shops are closed. Like you can't go sit in there.
Yep.
Serious, really hard for me.
Yep. No, I totally understand that. I mean, getting out of the house and being able to, you know, cause sometimes the house can feel oppressive, right? Like you need to get out in order to think. So I hear you.
Yeah. Yeah. So I know that I'm going to, do it and I'm committed to it. And I also have a book coming out and there's a lot that goes with that. Right.
Yeah. So much, right? So much like psychological, emotional, and like actual labor goes into it.
It's true. It's really true. It's, you know, and it's like, I'm not doing, you know, like the events are sort of off the table, at least here, you know, like there's definitely like people I think are doing events, but it's a bit like altered, you know? So I'm not really planning anything crazy like that. But still there's a lot that goes with it. Different little writing projects and interviews and little bits and bobs, right?
Yep. It adds up.
It totally adds up.
Like this.
This.
Like being on our little show.
This, right? Which I was so excited about.
Yay. Oh, awesome.
Yay.
Yeah, we were excited
too. Samantha Irby, right? Me and Samantha Irby.
That's right. Yes, we are all on the same level as Sam. All of us. Right? Every single one of us.
100%.
On this recording are on her level.
Yeah, she would say that. I'm sure she would say that we're all on the same level.
She would say, bitch, of course you are. Shut the fuck up.
Oh, God, I just love you so much.
Well, Frances, thank you so much. This has been such a pleasure.
I really appreciate it, you too.
Thanks for coming on.
The book is Salad Days. It is on Unsolicited Press. It comes out on October 26th. So go get a copy, everyone. Oh, that was so fun.
That was great. It was fun to talk with Frances.
Yeah.
Loved it.
So inspiring. Write your books.
Write your books.
Just write your books, everyone. And Frances, you write your third book.
Yes, do it. All right.
So, okay. I just wanted everyone to know that Alex, completely inspired by me and all of my wins, is getting a Peloton.
I was like, what the fuck is she going to say?
Oh, God. All of my hard work over the past 18 months, just grinding on my Peloton, crying and thinking, sometimes laughing and dancing as I was today, has inspired Alex and his wife to get a Peloton.
I mean, really, this whole relationship has come down to me texting you at like 9:30 and you're like, it's 9:30, I can't text you until the morning. And no. Then I get a text at like 5:30 while I'm standing in the fucking like walk-in freezer today. It's like, here's my sign-up code.
The reason I couldn't text you last night is because we had to pause the movie we were watching so I could respond to your text.
Oh, Jesus, you are serious about movies. You paused the movie?
It was a scary movie.
Oh, my God. Oh,
okay. And I didn't want to miss anything. And then it was just like hard. I couldn't find my stupid referral code until I opened it in a new browser, and then I could find it. So that was what happened this morning when my children woke me up at 5 something.
I was like bleary eyed. I'm like, what is this text? And I'm like, oh yeah, good. The goods are here. It's all come to this.
And I can't wait for you to cry on the Peloton for the first time.
Listen, I I'm an easy cry, so this is no big deal.
Wait, you are? I didn't know that about you.
Yeah, I am.
You are?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
When's the last time you cried?
I don't know. Last time a commercial was on, like upstairs, there was a commercial. Let me, have you seen the one? Okay. Girl gets on the bus. Okay. Have to get the genders correct.
Oh my God.
Guy gets on the bus.
Okay.
Blind. This is a kid.
All right. Already crying.
First day of school. He's trying to find a seat, doing a great job. Sits down next to this girl and she goes, "Oh, you sit next to me. I'm whoever the fuck." Tears. Just like I'm like, oh God, it's stupid shit. Like whatever. Yeah.
Sit down next to me. I'm whoever the fuck.
Oh God.
Ben doesn't allow us to watch television that has commercials in it.
Ben is smart.
He goes, Jesus Christ. What are you saying over there? Our house?
No, watching a TV show with commercials.
Oh, he said watching a TV show with commercials sounds brutal. He said you're right.
He's right. He's right.
Wheel of Fortune or something.
Yeah, he wants to know if you're watching Wheel of Fortune.
Listen, I live in the suburbs.
He said he lives in the suburbs. Shut up.
We watch all the dumb shit.
He said that's watching shows with commercials is a gateway to angry dad.
Oh, there's no gateway needed. Are you kidding me? I live in that space. Oh my God.
Oh, man. Yeah, we have to, if we're watching like sports, we have to mute the commercials. Yeah, because that was a tradition passed down from his grandmother. And then
it's a great move.
And everything we watch, we can't watch it until it's on a platform that has no commercials. And you know what? It's really changed my life.
I think it's awesome. That's cool. I did.
We're too old for this. Okay. Like life's too short.
I pay for the YouTube without commercials, mm-hmm. and that's a game changer. I love it. But everything else.
We did that too when our kids were like way into Blippi.
Mm-hmm.
Blippi heads.
Oh my God.
Where you at?
Blippi is fucked. I didn't realize. It's just like he's just like running around the playground. Like
I went through so many emotions. Like I hated him. And the first time I ever saw him, I felt sorry for him because I was like,
me too.
Oh God, he's trying to have this YouTube career. What happened to him? Who hurt him? And then I hated him. And then like spring happened, like we were coming out of a dark winter and like spring happened and we were watching like an Easter Blippi or something. And I was like, okay, I like Blippi now.
The train
Blippi is a delight.
Oh, I gotta check that out.
Yeah, but we love to talk about how now he just mails it in. He's just like, oh, hey, look at that cloud.
Oh, the letter Q.
He's like, there's one. That's right. There's one clip. I can't remember. At the end, he's like, okay, kids, bye. Tell your parents if they like my stuff to press like on YouTube. And hey, remember, you're really special. I like you a lot. Don't talk to strangers. If you see a stranger, say, stranger, stranger, danger. But really, don't talk to strangers. Okay, bye-bye. It's so weird. It's
in a creative pursuit. Okay.
Yeah.
Self-publishing.
Okay. Ben's really, I think Ben shit his pants a little bit. Okay.
I love how wound up
his pants a little bit.
Good children's programming. Bluey shits all over that.
He said Bluey shits all over Blippi. And you know, it's true.
Bluey,
but I have my problems with Bluey as well. No parent plays with their kid that much. Okay.
Or has like that much awareness, or is that awake?
Exactly. Like I do my best, but come on. I need some mommy time. Okay. Yeah. Anyway, I forgot. Okay, so you're getting a Peloton. And you watch TV with commercials. That's the gist of that. Okay. And then the other thing I prepared, I wanted to ask your opinion. Okay. Lincoln Michelle at the Lincoln tweeted, "The older I get, the more I only remember and think about the brilliant but flawed books and never the mediocre but polished ones." How do you feel about that?
I don't know. I'm more of a rereader of the same books over and over. And I mean, if not for the show, I would probably just continue doing that.
Yeah. Cause you're like, you also do that with hockey games and Skyfall.
That's yeah. I like to just return to the same shit. Like a happy person. I don't know. I guess I tend to agree, but at the same time, I don't read mediocre books if I don't have to. I'll bail on a book after a page. So
has there ever been a situation where you've read a book and you're like, this book is good, and then when you're done reading it, like a day goes by and you think back and you're like, that book was all right?
I think I've had the opposite more often, where I thought something was not great or bad and then gone back to it and thought that I really enjoyed it, or just not known why. The thing that most often happens to me is I will not know why I liked it, and then I'll have to reread it to understand. There's a book called 7 Years by Peter Stamm, and I read it like 5 times over a 4-year period, just because I was like, how does this work? It's just so, it's kind of flat, but at the same time, it's completely enthralling.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, there's books like that. I don't know. How do you feel?
Yeah. My immediate reaction was like, yes, I totally agree, because I think you and I differ a little bit in that I really love messy books that feel like not bland messy, but like messy, extreme, you know, or like if the book is just constructed of like beautiful images, even if the plot doesn't go somewhere, mm-hmm. or you can see the writer, like, I don't know. I think I would agree with that. I think the books I think about the most are books that ultimately failed maybe in their plot, but it didn't matter to me.
Yeah.
And I think that's because I really like, I think about moments more than I think about like overarching narratives, but then I can think of examples where that's not true as well. I just thought it was an interesting perspective. Yeah.
Are you that way with all art, with all mediums? I mean, like, do you feel like you're the same way with movies and music and stuff?
Oh yeah, totally.
Mm-hmm.
But we have like a big collection of folk art, and that stuff's super messy and like idiosyncratic and totally its own thing, you know?
Right.
And not perfect. It's perfect in its own way. Like one of my favorite pieces we have is, I think her name is Jennifer Harrison, honey. Is that right?
Yeah.
It's this painting of a trailer, and she paints with a palette knife. She doesn't paint with brushes because she wants, like, ultimately she wants the texture on the canvas. She doesn't.
Oh, cool.
And that kind of gives the feeling that she's trying to.
What was the last name? These are awesome.
Yeah. Aren't they so beautiful?
Yeah, they're amazing.
But yeah, again, I did not spend this. This was back when her stuff was more affordable for me.
Back when she was a garage band.
Anyway, yeah, I really had to think about that.
If someone's like not clearly doing something, mm-hmm. like if they're not like up to something right away.
Exactly.
I'm just not interested. Like I don't, my least favorite kind of book is, and this you might have to cut, is when you read the first paragraph and you're like, it was this person's goal to write a book. Like I want to read things by people who are writers, and whatever that means, it is fine. Like I think of all the time about our Stan episode with Miriam. Like she is a writer.
Mm-hmm.
And I would never have picked that book up. It's like way outside normally what I would be drawn to, but like that book is completely engrossing. I mm-hmm. love it. Mm-hmm. And she is up to something right away. And I think that's it. It's like that you either are or you aren't. And I,
yeah, it's like, yeah. It's like courage on the page. I know we talk about that. We've talked about that with Megan Phillips before. Hey, Megan.
Totally. Hey, Megan.
Like, where's the fucking courage? Like, where is this person taking a risk or taking a chance? That's what I want to see.
Totally.
But there's so many people who love those kinds of books that are very polished and absolutely. Very satisfactory and tell you exactly what you're supposed to feel when you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So good for those rich people, those rich writers.
Buying up all Jennifer Harrison's recent stuff.
Yeah, you're the ones who bought her out. Anyway, that's it.
That's it. Go enjoy TV without commercials.
Oh, thank you. You Bye. Go enjoy those commercials.
Oh, I love them.
Bye.
Bye.
I'm a Writer But is recorded by Alex Higley and me, Lindsay Hunter, in our respective basements. Editing by Lindsay Hunter. Music by Max Loop. Yeah, yeah.